Okay, it's 2:30. It is a Tuesday. It means we got Connor Boyack. Connor, are you with us?
I am, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Very good to hear.
So you want to talk secession?
Well, it seems everyone's talking about that. I wanted to jump into the fray, and it's hard with stuff like this because I think it's being done in the wrong way, but you can't help but appreciate any opportunity to elevate some issues into the public discussion, even if maybe it's not being done in the best way. For those who haven't heard, the White House has had a policy under the Obama administration. They created this petition website, and for years have said that anyone who gets a petition that gets more than 25,000 signatures on it, the Obama administration, someone in the administration, not necessarily the president, will publicly, you know, make a statement about, you know, in relation to whatever the issue is for the petition. So in the wake of last week's election and the results that Obama had won re-election, there were many petitions that were started, primarily one for Texas, asking permission from the federal government to allow the state to peacefully secede. And so there have been a lot of copycat petitions that have been started for other states. There are now, at last count, 30 states, probably a little bit more, that now have petitions on the White House website asking the president permission to allow the state to peacefully secede. So I believe that this has many problems, and I've called it silly is kind of my word for it. I don't think it's the right way to go about anything like this. If this is the proper course of action, or the desired course of action, if these people in fact do want to see their state secede, a state does not secede by asking permission from the government. I mean, imagine the founders at the end of the day, after all their pleas for change from Parliament falling on deaf ears, saying, pretty please, will you instead let us govern ourselves independently? Of course, you know, the crown would have, you know, laughed in their face and outright refused, and then probably even clamped down further. And yet we have the same thing going on in our day, where those who are, in my view, rightly frustrated with the federal government are begging and pleading that the federal government restrain its own powers, or in this specific case, allow a state to secede. It's foolhardy, it's silly. But again, as I said, you can't help but appreciate the opportunity to elevate the idea of secession or states' rights or federalism or whatever angle you want to take, because it is important to talk about. And the more that it's talked about, perhaps there is going to be a lot more conversation started from this and a lot more legislatures considering legislation to fight back against the federal government, if not, you know, full-on try secession, which I don't anticipate happening in any of the states. And that is another problem with this, is that this is a bunch of random individuals attempting to ask permission for their state to secede, when secession, if it is to be done at all, must be done through the state legislature. And even more so, for example, the Texas petition has triggered enough has collected enough signatures to trigger the response that is now being awaited on part of the Obama administration. Last count, you know, a little earlier today, the Texas petition had 76,000 signatures of the required 25,000. The Louisiana one has gained 29,000 and got more than the threshold, so that should be receiving a response, probably the exact same response that the Texas one will get. But what's odd here is that, you know, if this was to be at all potent, you would expect that the Texas petition would be signed by people living in Texas. And yet what you find is people nationwide are signing basically every petition they can find. So some disgruntled guy in, you know, Vernal, Utah could be signing the petition for all these other states. And so it somewhat dilutes the potency of being able to say, look at all these Texans who are fed up. It's just, you know, many people from all over who are trying to trigger this response on part of the Obama administration, which we can all anticipate what the response is going to be. It's not too hard to know what it's going to be. And if anything, there could be a potential downside here to allowing even more precedent, even more official statement on the matter to exist by asking this permission and then getting the Obama administration to say no, and this is why, and we're a permanent union, and the Civil War clearly showed that, and we need to all work together, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, here's the thing that, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but here's the thing that boggles my mind, and you know, I was a little worried when you mentioned this, because I saw that all the Becker heads, this is a topic on the Glenn Beck website too, and I'm glad you're taking the position you can, because first thing in my mind was like, okay, so you clearly have no clue about American foreign policy then. Domestic policy is bad enough, but you secede, and all of a sudden you become a foreign country. And that doesn't work so well.
Right.
For the rest of the world.
Yeah, you know, and that's a very valid point. A lot of these petitions have said, well, our economy, for example, in Texas, they said, our economy is as strong as many of these other thriving nations. You know, we can be self-sufficient with all our resources, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, you know, the question back in the Civil War days was, had the South actually seceded, what would have been the you know, bilateral relation, or the relation between the North and the South as independent countries? Would it have ultimately, after the dust settled, been a friendly one? Maybe they would have kissed and made up. Would there have been kind of constant war back and forth because they were, you know, in the vicinity of one another and kind of chafing along that border? One cannot know. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. We can envision plenty of scenarios in which the federal government would not take lightly a seceding state and would go to great lengths, whether with drones or otherwise, to see that that was not done. So that is somewhat foolhardy, again, with the size and scope of the government today, to attempt to defy it in such a blatant and, you know, frontal assault as secession would be. Not that I don't disagree with it intellectually, theoretically. I think states clearly reserve the right constitutionally to do so. I just don't know that any state in the Union today has the stamina, the political spine to go to that extent and suffer the consequences. Still there, Jake?
Well, this is my argument, too, against anarchism, to be honest. Like, I'm totally there. I'm with it. I'm like, I love it. Sounds good, and good luck with that, because they've got anthrax, they've got stealth bombers, they've got DARPA, they've got the NSA. Good luck.
In our backyard now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is to win hearts and minds, and you hear the intelligence agencies talking that all the time, and I think that's probably the best way to do it, to actually try to convince people and wake people up to freedom, to liberty, in the political sense.
And I think if anything is to be done, it needs to be at the state line. Again, you know, many of the founders saw the state legislatures as being the interposing force between the federal government that they had created and the individual liberty of each of these citizens. It is at the state legislature where you need a governor, you need an attorney general, you need a legislature who's willing to pass the laws, to fund it if necessary, to do whatever's required to interpose between those two parties. And at this point, we, at least in Utah, and I don't think any state really has that.
Yeah, it's certainly yeah, I mean, it's not in the I mean, look, Texas has tried. I mean, it's just the whole secession thing. Yeah, it's like, yeah, we have the right, but yeah, you're right. I mean, and you brought it up, Civil War. Good luck with that.
Well, and that was,
they killed,
you know,
more people in the Civil War. I mean, that's not happening.
Capita.
That is not happening. They're really willing to go to the post on this.
Yeah, they've proven that in the past. I mean, even in Utah's days, right, when it was supposed that Utah was defying the federal government, the president sent out the troops. In fact, I think that was the only time that that's happened, at least to the extent that it was. There's some unique feature about that that I don't recall off the top of my head. But that was the same thing. They were sending the military, the full force of the military, to quell this supposed domestic, in that case, a domestic threat. And we have the precedent. And so that's why I feel like, you know, again, intellectually, theoretically, the case is clear. States can and perhaps in some future should, but I don't know that any state right now is ready for it.
I think the collapse is coming anyway, so we just got to sit around and make sure that the right people are there to clean up the mess. All right, come on back, guys. We're in the middle of the Boyack Review right here. Total self-defense, K-Talk, versus Utah. The other day, where he just drove off sometimes out the cave. Are you still there with us, Connor?
I am, sir.
Okay, so we're talking secession, and both of us are kind of poo-pooing the idea.
You know, and not really poo-pooing the idea, at least in my case, but poo-pooing this specific any sort of chance of success for it happening in the short term, especially with the avenue, the approach being taken by these folks trying to get the petition signed. You mentioned, for example, Glenn Beck in the earlier segment and the Beckerheads and everyone talking about that. Well, it was really interesting. This morning, Glenn Beck was talking about this, And I think he raised a legitimate point that why would you want to give the federal government your name and say, look, I'm a secessionist? You know?
Yeah, that too.
Because you have to create an account on the White House website in order to sign a petition. So
here's my address.
Right, you're divulging personal information saying, yes, I want to secede from the federal government, and you're telling that to the federal government. Maybe, you know, you're okay with that, but I don't know that everyone is okay being on that list. And so Glenn was like, you know, why would you want to do this? This is kind of crazy. But he made an intellectual argument with which I strongly disagree and want to talk about briefly before moving on to other related concepts. And that is that he said that the issue of secession was settled by the Civil War. And by no means is this something that is unique to Glenn Beck. Many, 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 many people have made this argument that the Civil War settled the idea of secession. And thank goodness for libertarian, free market, basically common sense and truthful historians, folks like Tom Woods and Kevin Gutzman and others who have done great work, for example, in Tom Woods' book Nullification, and there are other related books as well that clearly set out that the Civil War was not about secession, or it was not about nullification in Tom Woods' example. But then he lays out the case within that book for secession and why it was in fact constitutional. The idea, as Tom explains in his book, that secession was settled by the Civil War is like, I think in his book he talked about, you know, if I tell you the sky is green and you say, no, the sky is blue, and I punch you in the face or whatever, I throw a brick at your head is the example that he uses, that doesn't mean that I'm right, doesn't mean that you're wrong. Violence does not settle an intellectual dispute. Might
yeah, ad baculum,
right.
I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, what's odd, of course, or perhaps not surprising about this in Glenn's case, him now changing his tune and saying that the Civil War settled secession, was that on at least two separate occasions in the past, 2008 and 2009, that I've been able to find in just very limited Googling, Glenn has advocated secession, that states, in fact, do have the right to secede. And here he is now changing his tune a couple years later. And so,
yeah, imagine
again,
that.
Probably not too unsurprising. But I am at least grateful that more people are talking about this, not necessarily to work towards that end, but to better understand that states need to be fighting back against the federal government. And that doesn't mean outright seceding. Just as in the Founders' Day, they didn't just revolt one day. There was a long train of abuses, and there was a long process, an exhaustive process of documenting those abuses, seeking redress for them through established means. And once there was no redress found, once they could not seek justice or find any justice for these abuses that had been happening, then they continued to escalate until ultimately revolution was voted upon and came. And so it was definitely a last resort. We kind of think of the founders, I think, in many cases, as these just kind of very daring and bold folks who just woke up one day and were fed up with the king.
Yeah, they were very deliberate about it.
Right, they were very deliberate. And so that segues into what I want to talk about next for at least most of the remainder of the time, and that is efforts here within our own state of Utah to effectively accomplish the same thing. Not with the end result of wanting to revolt or secede, just as many of the founders, if you read in their writings, that wasn't a primary goal. They wanted to, you know, they wanted the protection of the crown. They wanted the trade and the benefits that came. Many of them did. They recognized, they were proud of their heritage as Englishmen. They saw themselves as proud colonists of the crown. And so it was a last resort for them to want to go to the extent that they did in, of revolution. It was not a primary goal throughout that entire process of trying to seek redress. And so same thing with here in Utah. You have many people who advocate what's called states' rights, which is a misnomer because states don't have rights. But it's just a colloquial term used to describe the efforts of a state to oppose the federal government's unconstitutional.
Yeah, the Tenth Amendment to the Constitution, the Tenth
right.
Amendment
so state,
Bill of Rights.
State powers. It's a defense of, you know, but it's termed states' rights. And so you have many here in Utah who fight for states' rights, not to say, hey, federal government, we're going to take a hike, you're horrible, see you later, we're going to go form the country of Utah or whatever, but to seek redress for the abuses that are very real, very legitimate, and that should be overturned and corrected. One of the mechanisms that was set up in Utah recently, in the recent past, I should say, was a bill by Ken Ivory in 2011, if I recall correctly. So about, what are we talking, about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, the 2011 General Session. Ken Ivory, a state representative in Utah, sponsored legislation, which was HB 76, and it was called the Federal Law Evaluation and Response. And he kind of did this as part of a big, you may recall, or some of your listeners may recall, Ken Ivory was kind of doing a lot of lectures and really promoting this effort called Where's the Line?
Yeah, right? Yeah, I had him on my show, discussed his book, all that kind
great.
Of stuff. Yeah.
So you know, his thing was, where's the line? Where is that constitutional line? And Ken's a very eloquent person. You know, he had all sorts of quotes that he provides and great arguments, and I think he makes his case very well. But the bill is where little bits of teeth start to come in, where we can actually do something about it, not just talk about how wonderful this idea is of balanced federalism. So this bill, HB 76, effectively set up a federalism subcommittee within what's called the Constitutional Defense Council. So the state of Utah, for a while at least, has had this Constitutional Defense Council comprised of legislators and the governor, attorney general, and folks like that, to review and try and respond to some of these usurpations of power on the part of the federal government. And in my study of it, and I haven't delved in too deeply, but in just my cursory study of it, the Constitutional Defense Council has not done a ton, right? They haven't done a whole lot, at least in the view of how much they could be doing with how, you know, aggressive how much the federal government has been usurping its powers.
Sure.
Now, HB 76 last year created this federalism subcommittee, and the purpose of this federalism subcommittee of the Constitutional Defense Council was to do initial evaluation of all these laws that the federal government was passing, along with executive orders the president signs, to review their constitutionality. And so they would be tasked, and it's a daunting task, to review all the laws coming out of Congress and all of these executive orders based on the specific enumerated powers of the Constitution, which, if I recall, were specifically enumerated in HB 76.
Yeah,
say,
I mean, there's probably not a budget to staff people to do
right,
that kind
yeah.
of work.
So it's tasked to the members of this committee, and one would hope that over the past 2 years they would have begun to start an evaluation, as they were required to do under this bill that was signed into law by Governor Herbert, to begin to document this long train of abuses that Utah now has for many purposes, one of which is to legitimize the opposition that Utah legislators, the governor, may have against the federal government, rather than just standing up and trying to give a speech and maybe rattling a couple things off your head, to basically smack down a manila folder or, several binders or boxes or what have you of all this collected evidence of instances in which the federal government has exceeded its constitutional bounds. Because that is what provides the intellectual substance to start to have the politicking and the chest thumping and the fighting back against the federal government. Well, unfortunately, as I was recently informed by someone, this subcommittee has been mostly dormant since it was started, which is very unfortunate if true, because that means that 2 years has gone by where we could have been collecting evidence and compiling a lot of this information and strengthening our arguments to go back and really push back against the federal government. And those who have been tasked by law as part of this this bill that Ken Ivory sponsored have been neglecting that duty. What I was informed is that in 2011, so this bill was signed into law after the session, so like April or May 2011, and to my knowledge, if my information is correct, they held no meetings that entire year. They couldn't even have a quorum because not enough people would come to the meetings and show up to do the job. And that during this year, 2012, there were two meetings, but what I'm told and what I intend to look into in the upcoming days is that not a whole lot was done in these meetings. In fact, there seems to be a misunderstanding on the part of those who comprise this subcommittee, those who have been tasked to do this project, about what they're even supposed to do. They're not quite sure what's going on. This morning, and I'm eager to get an update on this, there was a meeting, a separate meeting for the Constitutional Defense Council, and another meeting as well after that for this Federalism Subcommittee. And Michael Jolly, who's the director of our Center for Tenth Amendment Studies, was there in attendance and is going to be doing a write-up about that here within the next day or two, summarizing what happened and perhaps offering some steps that we should be following in the future. Because if, in fact, this subcommittee, which is specifically tasked to start doing a lot of this research and helping Utah legislators see the intellectual substance behind the arguments of nullification and the need to push back against the federal government, if they've been dormant, I think we're losing out a lot. These petitions that are circulating, again, I think are silly. Sure, they'll generate conversation, but they won't amount to anything. If people really want to push back against the federal government, reclaim their individual rights, reclaim the state powers that have been usurped, if they want to at all reduce the size and scope of the government, it's not going to be done by asking permission. It's not going to be done by asking pretty please. It's going to be done by doing it, by having an opposing force, which is this whole idea of balanced federalism. I found a very interesting quote, given its source, by Alexander Hamilton, who was like the chief nationalist, right, of all the founders, very pro-central government, and yet, listen to him. He says, "The balance between the national and state governments ought to be dwelt on with peculiar attention, as it is of the utmost importance. It forms a double security to the people. If one encroaches on their rights, they will find a powerful protection in the other. Indeed, they will both be prevented from overpassing their constitutional limits by certain rivalship which will ever subsist between them." So this idea that was promulgated in the Federalist Papers by Hamilton and those who were writing with him was that this balanced federalism would create a kind of a jealous competition between state and federal powers where one would check the other. It is the whole idea that put into the checks and balances of the federal government too, that Congress would check the judiciary and the president and vice versa. And history, I think, has conclusively proved now that to a significantly large extent, this prediction, this attempted prophecy of jealous competition between competing powers has completely and utterly failed.
Oh,
right?
My goodness. It's not even close. And here's the one thing I would like to say about this. And I like Ken. He's a very nice guy. I've talked to him a couple times. Like I said, I had him on a show. I've seen him around town sometimes. Nice guy. But I'll really believe that about this constitutional review panel thing when they seriously review the constitutionality of the war on drugs. I don't think that Ken is too excited to put that on the roster, though, unfortunately. Hold on, I got a caller here. Let's bring him in real quick.
Sure.
Caller, you're on the air. What's your name?
Hey, I hope I didn't interrupt you at a bad spot. Hey,
nope, you got to make it quick. We're almost out of time. What's your name?
Yeah, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Listen, if somebody steals your bicycle, and a couple days later you see your bicycle, what are you going to do? You going to petition that person to give it back? Give me a break. The federal government stole our land. Just start using it the way we, as citizens of the state, feel it is important to use it. Simple as that. If they want to go to court over that, fine, let's go to court. But in the meantime, we've got to exercise our constitutional rights.
Yeah, the problem is in this pissing contest, they've got a lot more guns in jails than the state of Utah, the feds. That's my only concern.
They've got about, 48% of the revenue that we use on a yearly basis?
Yeah, and they've been using it to build a lot of crazy weapons and stuff.
Yep, that's right. Well, who cares? I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Let's do this thing.
But is that the only choice? I think there might be a third way. Crazy, I know.
I know. Well, let's exhaust all of our... But where do we draw that line? At what point do we say...
Is this Ken Ivory? Is this Ken Ivory?
No, but thank you. I'm flattered that you would...
No, because his thing was, where do we draw the line? I'm just teasing. Chris, I appreciate it. We're running out of time. Anything else?
I'm done. I'll call again.
I gave you stage fright. Sorry, man. I appreciate the call, though. Connor, closing up, anything? We got about a minute left.
Yeah, no, I think Chris is exactly right. You know, we need to ask the question, where do we draw the line? And we need to have some political spine to push back, right? We need competent leaders who aren't going to only say on the campaign trail that, you know, this needs to be done, but that are actually going to follow through. Governor Herbert is a prime example. You know, he claimed in his inaugural speech that he will stand up with other Utah elected officials and vigorously defend our individual rights and, you know, the Constitution, and that's not being done. Yeah, the war on drugs, I completely agree with you, but to the extent that Utah legislators, the governor, the attorney general start fighting back at all on any issue, I think we need to applaud that and start helping them flex their muscles, right? And then we can work on other issues that maybe we might have initial disagreement on, at least try and push it back to the
state. You're right. I mean, baby steps would be better than no steps at all.
But the problem is, I think we need to make sure that we have an agreement on the common approach. And the fact that these legislators are derelict in their duty, if my information is in fact correct, is extremely troublesome. We need to encourage and persuade our legislators to be that interposing shield between us and the federal government. Until that happens, we're just going to be serfs of the state.
Well said, Connor. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the report. Boy,